Welcome to NZ Podcast.
Well, thanks for the strokes for that intro.
So, what's the strokes? Just back from Europe.
Europe, eh?
Yeah, well, I was in Ireland and then I was in the UK for a few days. That was a good trip. I had a good holiday. If you're going to go on holidays, you should take as much time as you possibly can. So I was away for 5 weeks.
Hence the show suffered.
Yeah, we didn't put anything out, I suppose. We did try to, well, we were talking about getting Skype organized, but that was never going to happen. I was too busy being on holidays anyway.
Anyways, tonight we have another guest as well. We have Jeff the Maori for all things Maori here tonight. So welcome aboard there, Jeff.
Thank you, Rob.
So we've got a couple stories we're going to talk about this week as well.
We do indeed. And we're going to, I'm going to talk about my little trip home.
Yes.
So if you'd listened to previous podcasts, you'd know that I've been basically here for in New Zealand for 2.5 years.
Shit, it's been that long already? Feels like 10.
I know. Well, no, actually, it doesn't feel like 10. It feels like, when I went home, basically, most of my mates were like, oh, how long have you been in New Zealand now? Is it a year? And I was like, it's been 2.5 years. It's like, fucking hell. It's funny though, you haven't seen these guys for like 2.5 years, and then you go into the pub and you meet them, and you know, you have a big hug, and how's it going? And yeah, grand, yeah, everything's sweet, and blah, 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 you're in New Zealand, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then 10 minutes later, you're straight back to where you were, 3 years ago.
Just, like, it's like you never left.
That's it, yeah, totally, that's amazing. That kind of really blew me away.
And you fitted straight back in as well?
You spend so much of your time, or so many years, just hanging around the same place, hanging around with your friends over there.
Yeah,
you just kind of have this thing, you just fit straight back in. And it's reassuring, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, it would have been very strange if you'd gone back and it was all weird and different. I mean, people just do not change.
So much changes, and so much changes stays the same, eh?
Oh, this is it, sure, yeah. So
not much really did change, or what?
The lads were all the same, you know what I mean? Everybody was doing really well. Ireland is doing quite well at the moment. It's awash with cash. It's basically the only way to describe it. I mean, it was doing quite well when I left, but a couple of things have changed. I mean, when I was living there, I was getting really pissed off at the place just because the euro had come in, inflation had gone through the roof, everything was ridiculously expensive. Salaries though had stayed the same. It was just really hard to just function on a day-to-day basis. Even like coming over to New Zealand, it was hard to save, to raise cash. But now I think things have calmed down a lot there. The price of a pint has come down. I think that was one of the things that actually drove inflation, was that the fact that the pub owners were, they were just adding more and more to the price of the pint. I mean, a pint of Guinness in a typical Irish or Dublin pub was, I think, 3.30. And when I left, it was close to 5 euros. That was only a space of like 2 years. So that was a bit, extreme. And now it's back down again. It's back down to I think it's 3.80 now.
Oh, wow.
So it's gone up still, but it's come way back down. So, I mean, I think what happened was whenever they brought in the smoking ban, and then on top of the price increases, people are just going, fuck this, I'm staying at home drinking. And the pubs kind of went, oh shit, we better lower our prices. And so they did. And they lowered them 2 euros in some cases.
See, we didn't even get that effect here. The smoking ban came in.
Yeah.
And, people just respected that, moved outside for their smoke, and then came back inside to drink.
Well, this is it, yeah. I think I think the smoking ban's been very good for Ireland. I mean, it's very popular. For one thing, a lot of pubs have got beer gardens now. They've got nice beer gardens. There's almost like a competition between the pubs. Because there's so much competition. Obviously, Ireland has quite a few pubs. So they've really made an effort to kind of get the beer garden up to scratch.
And they're covering them in.
Can you try that new down?
There we go. Sorry, we have a little technical difficulties there.
So it's just so much better. You can go into a lot of pubs, and there's a lovely beer garden at the back, so you can have your cigarette. And most of my single friends are very happy because, you know, they can go out and have a chat to the girls, you know.
Place to mingle, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They can
get them away from their boyfriends.
Well, exactly, yeah. And then when they go back in, they, you know, they realize how drunk they are because they've had some air. So they drink a bit less.
That's not always good for the women.
Do you have really dank pubs with really nice beer gardens? Or
you do, actually, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, like pubs that you'd never kind of normally go to.
Suddenly it's
beer garden. Yeah, because they're kind of, you can go to them now because they've got a cool beer garden. Like places that were really popular before aren't so popular because there's nowhere you can go and smoke. So it's kind of turning things up in its head, and yeah, it's been good. The other thing is a lot more immigrants, because Poland has been let into the EU since I left, and Dublin is a wash with Polish people.
Is there a little Poland now?
There is, yeah. Well, they've got their own pubs and they've got their own restaurants and, you know, their own accommodation blocks, I suppose. But I mean, it's as far as I can tell, it's been very positive. I mean, Polish people integrate well. You know, most of them can speak very good English, so there hasn't been, you know, a backlash. It remains to be seen what happens in the next couple of years, because Romania and Bulgaria are
set to.
Well, yeah, I think it won't be long before they're in the EU as well. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much of those. So the thing about Ireland is they've got a growing economy, so they need people to come there and work. And, you know, by and large, the Poles are doing all the jobs that a lot of Irish people won't do. So
it's not the skilled workers, it's the...
Well, yeah, exactly. They're doing all the lower income jobs. But, I mean, obviously there's exceptions to that. It's a kind of a similar trend than a lot of, you know, it's very similar in the UK. The UK, I think, have something like a million Poles have moved to the UK.
So who's living in Poland?
It's funny. A lot of the, I mean, the thing is, though, I mean, all the people that are moving are young. You know what I mean? They're not, you know, it's not families of people. It's mainly young people that are coming over who basically just want the opportunities.
Looking for that Irish dream.
Well, it's kind of a hard concept to handle, as it's called. I mean, in Ireland, you know, by and large, Ireland was, you know, traditionally always the place you left. It wasn't the place that you kind of went to. So it's, you know, the Irish people, you know, can vary between extremely racist to, you know, totally right on. So it's a funny thing. By and large, most young people are totally cool with the kind of multicultural society.
That's this generation, though, isn't it?
Well, this is it, yeah. And it's just really unemployed people that basically have a problem, like, you know what I mean? Because, you know, suddenly they see these foreigners come in and doing, you know, working like bastards and doing quite well for themselves. So, you know, obviously it doesn't really tie well with them. But, yeah, no, it's, I mean, Ireland is a very cool place at the moment.
It begs the question, which... do they do when they're heading home? Do they grab a Polish on the way home? What's the takeaway food for the Poles?
It's funny. I mean, you've got a huge variety. I mean,
sausage? Do you grab a sausage on
Kakarash?
Well, there's a really good place that myself and my girlfriend actually first got together in Dublin City Centre. It was one of these late night pubs that you'd never go to unless you're basically stuck after hours. That was one thing about Dublin, though, is like they have very strict licensing laws, you know what I mean? So you can't go to the pub at like 4 o'clock in the morning, everything's closed.
Not like New Zealand.
No way.
Like last New Zealand. Last jugs served at 6 a.m.
Oh man, I was like.
Last jugs were at midnight.
Oh,
handles till 6 a.m.
Handles.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We've got then, class here.
This is coming from Jeff the Maori, he knows.
I mean, that's one of the things you got to compare. It's like the drinking. You know, in New Zealand is so easy, and you know, you can, you know, if you're stuck on a Friday night and you're at a party and you know, you want to, you know, you meet somebody you haven't seen for a while, you can go to a pub and have a couple of quiet drinks, you know, and you know, they will be a quiet drinks because wherever you end up will generally be quiet at that time in the morning, and you can drink till whatever time suits you. In Ireland, it's just, you know, the license laws are very, very strict. They're not as bad as the UK. I think in the UK, they throw people out at 10 or something.
Not as bad as Canada either. Can't be outside on a patio. I think it's, well, when we left, it was after 11 a.m. You couldn't be out on the patio anymore.
At your own house?
No, out at restaurants and things like that, because it was the noise bylaws.
Oh, yeah.
And so they shut it down, no more serving out there.
So you just kind of like an outside drinking area, basically.
No. Oh, you, okay. It shuts down at 11.
Yeah.
Finish your drinks and you gotta keep drinking, go inside.
Yeah, it's mad. It just, I mean, Dublin is a drink driven place. I mean, no. When people go out, they go out to get fucked up. You know what I mean? There's no other way of describing it. And it's funny, like, because, I mean, you know, when you live there for so long, you just don't see it. You know what I mean? And when other people come to visit you, you know, they go, oh my God, people here, you know, they really go for it. Like, and it's like, no, oh, you know, you just, well, yeah, whatever, like, you know, get up to the bar and get me a drink. But when you go back after being, you know, been away for so long, it's just insane. You cannot believe. You know, like places that you went into, you know, I mean, one of the places we had one Saturday night in Dublin, we ended up in the Gaiety Theatre. It's a really old theatre. It's very, very nice. They turn into a nightclub on Fridays and Saturdays. So they have all these different areas and different bands playing and DJs playing. And it's pretty cool. And I always, you know, I used to bring people there because I kind of thought it was cool. But really, it's just a drinking place. You know what I mean? I mean, people aren't there to listen to music. They're there to fucking get fucked. You know what I mean? I mean, we had a group of about 10 of us. And, you know, two different instances of people starting on a couple of the lads. I mean, over something stupid, like, you know, spilled, somebody, you know, bumped into them and they spilled a bit of their pints. And the next thing is they're...
Yeah.
Oh man, it's just
you can expect that since beer's so expensive.
Yeah, well, actually the beer isn't too bad. It's on par with New Zealand in some places, especially in Dublin. I mean, you know, we're in a different pub actually today, we should mention that. Where are we? What's the name of the place?
It's Vespa.
Vespa Bar, yeah. The Vespa Bar, yeah. It's a very stylish kind of bar.
It is stylish. Yeah. We got our own little cave area tables. Yeah, nice tables, yeah. And chairs and stuff.
It's very pleasant. It's nice music there. And they got nice beer as well. But the place across the road is like owned by a Scottish guy called Twisted Hop. And it's a very nice place. They make their own beer. But I mean, a beer there costs $8. It's more expensive than you pay in Dublin for a beer. You know what I mean? So what the fuck's up with that? New Zealand's meant to be cheaper, man. And it's not. I mean, well, this is another thing you kind of notice. You know, you kind of have it in your head that New Zealand's actually really cheap, but actually, it's not that much cheaper. I mean, some things are cheaper. Accommodation, you know, food. But then, like, things like electricity, internet, phone, beer.
Don't even give me started internet. I think we talked before about it.
Yeah.
Internet.
It's not so fucking cheap, man. It's, you know, it's on.
Oh shit, dude. And the speed, don't even get me started. That's shit. Expensive shit.
Well, okay, well, to wrap up, Ireland was great. Well, I'll probably keep on talking about Ireland until next year or so. But for the moment, I mean, everybody asks me, what, you know, do I like New Zealand and how long I'm probably going to stay? And, you know, I said, well, I do love New Zealand because it's rocking. I just love living here.
It is a good life, isn't it?
It just comes down to lifestyle, you know what I mean? I think we've said this umpteen times, like, but it really does, because, you know, you can basically do what you want here, and it's easy, and it's fine, and the word I'd use is non-hassling. I don't know if that translates well. But,
look it up, it's non-hassling.
Yeah, it's like the opposite of hassle.
It's unhassle.
Yeah, exactly. It's the ultimate in non-hassling.
Freedom.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. It's just, well, you got freedom everywhere, but it's just more freedom here, you know. It's
the freedom to express yourself without being judged.
It's just easy living, you know what I mean? It's, you don't have to deal with the crap that you have to deal with anywhere else, especially in places like Ireland. Ireland is a great place, and I love it, and I'll definitely be back reasonably soon. But, in terms of, I'm glad I don't live there anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting to go somewhere that you've grown up, feel that things haven't really changed yet. Yeah, some things, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things that you miss, you know. You want to pop there, the atmosphere is just, there's something about it. Have you ever been to Ireland, Joe?
No, London was as close as I got.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, even, I suppose, I mean, English pubs are kind of there, but there's something about an Irish pub. It's just, it could be just three people in the place, but it just has atmosphere, you know, like nothing else in the, on the world.
So you're just shitting us about quiet drinks. Three people for quiet drinks, it's still rocking.
It is, it's weird. It is strange, and just the whole Bulls is just like, that's got fucked. You know what I mean? It's something. And I always used to blow my mind that so many tourists used to come to Ireland every year and, you know, rave about the place. Say, you know, anyone that you've met on your travels has been to Dublin for a weekend or whatever, they always say that how, you know, that's such a great time. And I never really bought it, you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, you're just going on the novelty of being in Ireland kind of thing. But no, there is. There's definitely a buzz there. That's, you know, you just don't get in other places. So that's probably, you know, that's one of the things I definitely miss. But yeah, there's not many things, you know what I mean? Obviously I miss my friends, but I mean, I don't miss, you know, the insane house prices, you know, the traffic, the, just the non, the inability of people to actually, you know, get off their asses on a weekend and do something. I mean, it's just one of those things. So we leave it there for the moment.
We'll leave it there. we'll probably, I'm sure we'll revisit your adventures of Ireland there, Johnny Dodge.
Yeah, we will, yeah.
Be back to it, but there are a couple of things that we're going to talk about this week. Just a quick recap, we're going to talk about the tasers that just brought into New Zealand.
Right, so these are the
guns, the weapons. So they're called in the media the weapons that the police are now using.
Did they use them in Canada?
They had. Oh, jeez, you're exposing my ignorance, thanks, Johnny Dodge. But they were bringing them in as we were leaving. And,
in Canada,
yeah. And I know that. Actually, one of my best mates back home, he's in the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Oh, really?
He wanted to get
he's
in.
He's a Mountie.
He's a Mountie. Yeah, he gets to work every day on a horse. No, I'm just kidding.
Do they ride horses around the place?
Oh, I mean,
so I've never been to Canada, so I don't know.
Well, the red uniforms are called the Sarge, and they normally are only in those for ceremonial purposes and things like that.
Right.
But
are they like the regular police of Canada?
Yeah, you'll have the Canadian police is the RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and some places have their own, like the OPP is the Ontario Provincial Police, and then you have your city police as well, like Calgary City Police and stuff. So but like RCMP is the police of Canada.
Right, yeah,
that's cool. But anyways, yeah, when he was going through training that, he was like, oh man, I gotta get in there before the tasers come in, because he did not want to get tasered. He's like, I remember him telling me, you know, going through training and they had the pepper spray in their eyes and everyone's like, ah, fuck. And then,
does he go around asking people, can they stick pepper thing in his eyes? I mean,
no, like going through training, through RCMP training, police training, you need to...
Experience
what you will be giving to other people.
Onto other people. Yeah.
So the pepper spray shit was in their face, and they're just screaming out like, just done. And he said, okay. After a little while, it was fine. And then later in the day, getting into the shower, the shit's in their hair, and it drains down their eyes. And just fucking, you see all those grown men crying in the showers.
It's kind of righteous, though, the fact that they do have to experience the pain themselves before they inflict it.
Well, that's why he was like, get me in before the tasers. But,
so they just brought tasers in here.
Just brought them in, yes.
And, yeah, a lot of people aren't too happy about it. I mean, the taser is a dodgy weapon. It's been used...
You think it's dodgy?
I just think my name on it. Well, in America, it's been in use in a lot of states for quite some time. 200 people have died from its use.
So they say.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what the stats say, basically.
And New Zealand police are saying that it's the by effect of the fall, the fact that they had an underlying health condition or a drug condition that is causing the deaths.
Yeah.
So that's their take on why it should be okay in New Zealand.
Why? Because people fall gentler, or
I think, you know, I would rather probably get tasered and risk a fall than getting shot with a gun.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
although I hope to never be in that situation, but I mean, I don't think I want a taser either.
They do discriminate a lot more because they hit one person. It doesn't go through a person and hit someone that's innocent.
Yeah. But I mean, it is a fairly fucking violent kind of weapon. You know what I mean?
How many times are you going to see a violent offender and say, stop? No, please stop? No.
Well, I mean, okay,
please stop.
Okay. I mean, they've got batons. I'm sure.
You have to get up to the person to beat them down with a stick now.
Okay, well, fair enough. Okay, fair enough.
They're only supposed to be used when they are threatening the life of another person or the officer.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, you know, officer discretion,
would,
you know what I mean?
That was the same with the pepper spray until they started
using
people out
all
using
the time.
It all
yeah,
the time.
Exactly. Indiscriminately, basically.
So that's,
and I mean,
that's the big fear here.
That's the thing, yeah, exactly. And that's my fear, specifically, you know what I mean? That it's just going to be something that's going to be, hello, officer. You know, you just get tasered, you know what I mean? But anyway, the story is quite funny in that, basically, in training, New Zealand's the police have had three serious...
Well, not serious, but three injuries.
Three injuries, exactly, yeah. From them using it on themselves in controlled conditions. So when you're trying to transfer that onto the street when you got some crazy guy, I mean, okay, I can understand you know the rationale behind it, but I just think it's still too much. You know what I mean? I mean, if you've got a baton, have you ever been hit with a baton?
No.
Okay, well it's fucking.
You've been hit with a baton.
Yes,
John,
it's a pleasure. Nice.
I have had the pleasure in France by the French police at a fucking rave.
They were having a good time too. Eh?
Oh yeah. That was their answer to crowd control: was tear gas the place and batten anybody who runs out with their eyes
streaming.
Yeah.
If you weren't tough enough to stay in there, you deserve a baton.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, and I mean, you know, that was. I mean, I'm just fearful of the French police, you know what I mean? They're just scary bastards. They will, you know, they're just brutal. The reason why it's brought in, because a lot of, you know, the certain areas in New Zealand where police have been stuck for a weapon that they could use effectively. But I think the taser is just too dangerous, you know what I mean?
There was, the week after it was brought in, there was... an armed robbery incident that the people actually robbing the place gave up because they didn't want to be tasered. They just said, sorry, here's your money, here's my knife, because I no way I'm getting in the front of that taser. So right there, there's one that was stopped right away without any.
But do you think they're already armed? I mean,
they got a knife, so they got to run at you. So imagine knife versus baton.
Either
way.
Well, it's like arms. I mean, they've got a handgun. I mean,
no,
they don't
carry them with them. They have to be brought by a sergeant.
Oh, really?
Or a higher officer. They can take them to an event where they think there could be trouble. They must be locked in the boot of the vehicles, and they have to be authorized before they can use them.
So they have to ring control before.
Very much so.
Really?
Yes. Yep.
That's fair enough. That is fair enough.
Mm. Thanks, Jeff the Maori.
Oh, you're welcome.
That's
me
up. Woo! Okay, I'm just not going to talk anymore.
No, but there's one thing that, I mean, there's going to probably be lots more pros and cons for these tasers that are coming in, because it is so new.
Well, I mean, if they're used with as much restriction as handguns are, I mean, okay, fair enough. You know, but I mean, the whole thing that they're available to use last resort, I mean, I'm sorry, but I just don't trust any police force in the world to, you know, do that.
It's still an individual decision by the officers. And
exactly.
Some of the people that are getting through, maybe you don't like them quite as much, and they probably don't have as much discretion as you'd like. It's the risk you take when you only pay low dollars to get people to protect you.
Do you think the cops here aren't paid enough?
I think the quality of the people they're getting is lower because the wages are not enough.
Do you know what the wages are? Do you have any friends in there?
I looked into it a few years back, and it was a $35,000 to $40,000 starting pay, and it stepped up in $5,000 lots until you were fourth year.
Right. So it started off on 35.
Yep.
Okay, so 35 is probably about, what's that in US?
How much?
What, 65 cents in the dollar, roughly, at the moment.
I mean, you can live off it. I mean, because I have been paid that in New Zealand, one of my first jobs here, so it's roughly what I was getting. So you can live off it, but you wouldn't be able to. It's not a high standard of living by any means.
You ain't doing anything.
Yeah.
You get to 50,000, 55,000
after four years. Yeah.
And you're working shift work. You're working with the scum of the country. I mean, you're not coming into contact with all the nice people every day.
So, oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a common problem around the world, I think, is that, I mean, the danger of having a low-paid police force is that they're corruptible, basically. I mean, if you can offer a copper 10 times, the old mafia equation was that if you can offer them 10 times their annual salary, they'll do whatever you want them to do. Yeah, it doesn't matter who they are.
Actually, just getting back to the tasers, what I thought was quite interesting was Helen Clark. Helen Clark, our Prime Minister here.
Our fearless leader.
Fearless leader, Helen Clark. She recently stepped into the tasers, but not so much the taser debate, but not so much good or bad. She said, yeah, I'd like to taser one of my fellow MPs, which I thought was quite funny. It was actually part of an MP of her own party. Oh, just really? kept talking and basically going beyond the line of what you should be saying, and she's like, yeah, maybe I should be getting my hands on a taser and giving him a shot, which I thought was
fair enough. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Why not? Maybe they should just do that, just give them all to all the politicians, and like they can taser each other in parliament, and then you know, they can kind of work out for themselves if they think it's a fair, you know, fair thing to do to their own citizens. You know, to have the trial period in Parliament. And then if somebody gets pissed off at each other, they can just taser each other. And then they can, you know, feel it out for themselves, that kind of way. Like. And then when everybody's been tasered, then they can vote on it.
You should actually motion that in there. Next time you're
Time you're in Parliament
next
meeting.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, just you know, when someone starts saying something I don't like, just taser them.
I should actually start implementing that in my work.
Ah, okay. Well, following up on that, on the anniversary of 9/11.
9/11 just passed. Yeah, 5 years.
Helen.
Again.
Well, basically, what Helen said was she was really happy that. She made a decision not to get involved in Iraq, whatever it was, four years ago. And she said it proved to be the correct one. And that the world was not a safer place 5 years after 9/11. So, I mean, New Zealand actually did send troops to Afghanistan. They sent their special forces. And they're still there. And New Zealand Army is still
there. That's a different battle, though, isn't it?
Well, I mean,
that was a direct retaliation, or not retaliation, but a direct response to 9/11, whereas the Iraq invasion.
Yeah, which I think very few people would have any serious objection to. I mean, the Taliban, you know, unlike sort of Saddam to a huge extent, were a brutally oppressive regime. Not to say that Saddam wasn't, but I mean, the Taliban.
Any Kurd, and they'll probably disagree.
Well, this is it. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, but in direct comparison to, I think the Taliban, I think. I mean, the Taliban totally deserved to be fucking taken out of power. I'm not saying Afghanistan was a completely and utterly justifiable war. I mean, I think it's interesting the way that they didn't, I mean, the Western powers didn't go in on lands. They just basically paid a lot of Afghanistan's Afghanis to, you know, take out their own government, which they've been trying to do for years anyway. They just gave them a little nudge and a lot of airstrikes later. And then, you know, but I mean, Afghanistan is a fucking war zone at the moment. Britain is losing loads of troops. They made an appeal to their NATO partners there very recently to send 2,000 extra troops that were very badly needed, which they got no answer for. Like, I mean, nobody wants to basically do it.
Yeah,
it's just a fucked up situation. Iraq, on the other hand, is something that can only be described as a horrible mistake.
That was fucked from the start, wasn't it?
I mean, there's one thing, you know, going in there under false pretenses, as in, you know, weapons of mass destruction, which didn't exist, which my mother would have told you they didn't exist before they went in.
Did they? Are they now in Iran?
Ah, Christ. Well, I mean, it's a well-known fact. Well, not a well-known fact, but a lot of people have said, a lot of CIA or ex-CIA people, or CIA people who lost their job, when they said the following, that Saddam basically scaled down his attempts to build a weapon of mass destruction probably about 3 years after the first Iraq war, because he realized it wasn't going to happen and that it was just going to antagonize people and give America an excuse to come in. But then, of course, when America went in anyway, he started playing it up a bit in the false hope that they wouldn't come in. Because, like, well, South Korea has a weapon of mass destruction. That's the only reason they'll never get invited.
But
so you can understand Iran's motivation
from the start. Hey, we've got one. But they went for Iraq instead. Even
yeah.
They said, oh, we think you have one.
Well, it explains Iran's actions trying to get a weapon together. You know, because basically, if you have a weapon of mass destruction, you will not get invaded. Seems to be the state of play at the moment. You know, because you can retaliate, basically.
And if you have a delivery system able to get it.
Well, that's it, like, yeah. But
so
I mean,
someone that's
you know,
going to hurt one of the invading countries.
Well, I mean, well, I suppose America's problem at Iran at the moment is that they're terrified that they'll nuke Israel. But Israel will have a bomb, you know, so it's not as if they'll escape, you know, retribution.
Escape,
yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. It's kind of crazy. But anyway, Helen made a lot of references to old Tony Blair. It's interesting, like, because I mean, Tony Blair.
Oh, T-Bone, he's. Before the year's out, he's said he was going to go, but more people are trying to say.
Yeah. Well, Helen basically said that, you know, she kind of applauded a lot of Tony's policies, you know, that he's done within the UK, like domestic policies, which, you know, have changed society fundamentally. It must be said, you know, in a positive way in some cases, and you know, obviously there's a few problems there. But the main reason Tony suffered, you know, in terms of their grassroots support, is because of his alignments with the great Satan himself, George Bush.
I'm a George Bush fan then.
No, I think he's a crazy person. I think. That's basically all there is to say about it. I mean, I have nothing against Americans at all. And in fact, some of my best friends are American. I think the kind of anti-American wave that's kind of hit every country, you know, in the world since Bush has come in, especially since 9/11, is unfair.
It's very unfair.
You know, because... you know, George has managed to, you know, done a few dodgy little things. I think even a lot of people that voted for him basically voted for him out of pure fear, because they felt if they didn't, well, and in fairness, like, John Kerry wasn't exactly an attractive candidate in the last election. I mean, it's surprising really how many votes he actually got. I mean, I think anyone who did voted for him purely because he wasn't George
Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he was the other option.
Yeah, exactly. But I think I don't think he would have made a great president, personally speaking. And, you know, he just left himself way open for attack with just his bumblings, you know what I mean? He was just a terrible candidate in the end. But Tony, I've always, Mr. Blair, I've always kind of had a kind of respect for, basically based on the fact that he really did a lot of good things for Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland has pretty much been at peace now for the last kind of 10 to 12 years. I mean, there has been still crazy stuff going on, but in comparison to, say, the Thatcher years or you know, John Major years, you know, when the Conservative Party basically ruled the roost. You know, a lot of progress has been made. You know, people are a lot more settled now, and you know, it looks like that peace is going to hopefully stand up and last. I mean, obviously there's still huge problems there, but compared to, you know, say the 1970s or the 80s, I mean, it's huge progress has been made. So it's kind of, I always find it hard to understand Tony, why, you know. I mean, I can understand why Tony did align himself with Bush. Basically, he kind of saw himself as a way to kind of hold back Bush, you know, from, I mean, if you can remember before the Iraq War, you know, they didn't even want to get a UN resolution to go in, but, you know, Tony kind of said, look, if you go in without a UN resolution, you'll lose all support completely.
Yeah.
So he reined them back to some degree.
I guess he's some sort of... No, I wouldn't say calming voice, but he's some sort of voice in that storm anyways.
Well, yeah, a calming voice of reason. But, I mean, of course, you know, the storm is too strong. It's just too strong. And you can't really hold back a tidal wave, like, you know.
Good analogy.
The neoconservatives.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
So, but he's, I mean, Tony's just going to get, he's getting sucked down with it. You know what I mean? He's going down with the ship.
Oh, another one. That's two. Here, I'm writing these down. I'm writing these down.
The gold.
The
gold.
The ship. Ship going down. Yes. Got it.
So anyway, that's what Helen had to say about the whole thing. And I have to say, I do agree. By the way, what do you think of Helen, by and large, Jeff, Mary?
Helen's not a favourite of mine, unfortunately.
Not a favourite of a lot of people.
Her policies target not me, basically. It doesn't make me any better off. Where I'm sitting, if you've got to have two kids and a wife and be deep in debt before you get any benefits from the government, that's sending the wrong message as far as I'm concerned. The people that get out there and try and do better for themselves don't get the tax breaks. The people who are sitting back and waiting for things to happen for them are getting the tax breaks.
So like the really rich people?
No, the really rich people are still sitting on a high tax rate, still higher than Australia. So we're not talking, we're talking about the middle of the road guy, the guy who works 40, 50 hours a week, working really hard, maybe two incomes in the family, so therefore they earn too much to get a break. And the way the government hands out welfare, that you are rewarded for doing nothing rather than for trying to help yourself. Secondary tax on overtime, even though there is low unemployment, next to, and especially in skilled industries, if you work overtime, you get penalised.
Yeah.
Whereas if there's not the hundreds of people out there waiting to fall into that job, and you're working overtime to help your company and to get yourself ahead, why should you be penalised for it? It's just a big bugbear of mine.
Was that difference under the national government?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
The tax breaks were aimed at, if you earned that extra money and you decided to invest it in superannuation,
right,
or some other thing like that to help yourself out in later years, you received a tax break at that stage.
Right.
So
this stuff I don't really know about.
Yeah, I'm the same way, because I think we're too new to the country still to figure it out.
And we've no points of reference. I mean, Labour have been in power since we've been here.
9 years now, yeah.
Yeah. So how do you account for their popularity?
There's a lot of people.
It was a close race, though, last time. It was a close race.
There's a lot of people in that groundswell area that are now getting the tax breaks that are voting. That's where their strengths are.
Yeah.
There's more people below the super wealthy line that are giving them the boost.
So you're talking about the upper middle class?
The middle to upper class have been our national voters, traditionally.
Yeah.
And the lower to bottom, Labour voters. And it seems that there's more people in that lower area that are actually getting some benefit that are voting.
Do you really think?
I think they very much bought votes in the last election. They bought the family vote, and they bought...
Just with those tax breaks for families?
With those tax breaks, and they bought the student
and
vote.
And the student vote, as you're going to say.
With taking the interest off on the student loan while you're studying.
Yeah.
Students were actually making pretty damn good money taking out student loans and investing in other places.
Yep. If you could work it well, if you could get the receipts on an academic receipt, you could borrow
$30,000,
$40,000 and go and invest it somewhere else and do really nicely, thank you.
Yeah, fucking bastards. I've always hated students.
Oh, they do have to do it. There are checks and balances, and they have to do it well to get those receipts and prove that it's academic spending.
Yeah.
But if you've got a little bit of money behind you already, you're away.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, the thing, it comes to international politics again. Don Brash, leader of the National Party, basically said that New Zealand should have gone into Iraq.
Yeah. They did. They aligned themselves very much with the Americans.
Yeah,
and John Howard of the Aussie.
And with the Australians, exactly.
So what do you think of that? Do you agree?
Their thinking behind it was to get a free trade agreement with the US, to get our goods into the US, work more on the world and the global market.
I don't think that's any reason to go to war.
It's not a good reason.
No, it's not.
But it is
also
a reason.
But I mean, you have to bear in mind that the Aussies, the Australians, did get that free trade agreement.
And they're doing very well, thank you for it.
But I think apparently they're not. Apparently not doing very well at all.
Different companies, different goods are
doing well. I mean, the very big companies have done quite well. But by and large, the typical kind of, smaller, lower, not so big Aussie company are getting screwed, basically, because the Americans can outprice them.
I don't know a lot about that. No.
Yeah. Oh, that's just what I'm writing.
Yeah. Guys, we're better start wrapping up here, I think. We were going to just end one quick thing with the prostitute update.
Oh, yeah.
Prostitute update.
The prostitute news?
The prostitute news of this week is, well, really, they did a survey recently of the street workers and counting the number of street workers. Has it increased, decreased since
the legalization?
Legalization of prostitution.
In New Zealand.
In New Zealand.
Which happened last year.
Which happened last year. Thanks, Johnny Dodge.
You're taking a subtle and very worrying interest in this.
Well, I mean, we've got to, we've got to account for all the listeners who haven't heard this before.
And
haven't heard the previous discussions on
prostitution. Most of the feedback is about the prostitution, isn't it?
Yeah, everybody likes prostitutes. At least hearing about them.
Do you have a rating system?
What do you mean? Oh, like
for prostitutes.
For prostitutes. No, I don't personally.
Oh, it's okay.
But I can't imagine our popularity isn't being fueled by anything else except our prostitute news.
But I guess, yeah, going back to prostitute news, increased or decreased since the legalization? Jeff the Maori?
And the paper last week, even.
Even?
So we're talking about streetwalkers here.
Yes, it's different. Actually, I think, yeah, we'll have another round that place. Original,
Golden,
and Pilsner.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. See, now that's service in this place. That's service.
They bring it to your table as well.
It's great.
She would get some business if she were a prostitute.
Jesus Christ.
Jeff the Murray, my God.
Shameless.
She's cute. Well, what do I have to say?
Yeah, that's what he made it first.
fair enough.
You can't argue with that. We didn't even get on to Maori politics.
We didn't. Oh, that's another show.
We'll have to get you back to hammer this out.
Anyways, the prostitute update. They say that there's slightly decreased, but all they're doing is looking at street workers, the number of people applying their trade on the street.
Yeah.
So, by and large, has it changed? It's really hard to say. There are slightly less people on the street.
Well, the main point I think to make here is that the national government have been screaming like little fucking whingy babies that the whole streetwalkers have increased dramatically. You know what I mean? They've been making a big fucking deal about it, especially in Christchurch. It's just simply not the case. You know what I mean?
They were worried about the age. That would be interesting to if they surveyed the age of those street workers.
Well, I think they have. And I think basically there's as many underage workers. Now, I mean, if you're underage, basically you can't get into a brothel, you can't work in a brothel. So, yeah, if you're going to basically ply your trade, you're going to have to do it in the street. There's no increase in the amount of underage. So, I mean, there's still a problem. I mean, it is still a problem. I think it always will be a problem in any society. You'll always have that kind of thing going on. But you can't stamp an egg. Like, it's just stupid to even think you can.
Yeah.
Certainly pleasing to know it hasn't got any worse then.
Sorry?
It's certainly pleasing to know it hasn't got any worse.
Yeah, well, definitely. I think so. And I think it is a good thing that it is legal. You know what I mean? Yeah, I think it's definitely better for society.
As we've gone through in previous episodes.
We've talked about many times.
Definitely.
It's
good to see them paying their taxes as well.
Well, that's it. Yeah, exactly. At least they can, they've got legitimization. Oh.
Legitimization. Anyways, I think we should probably wrap her up there. We got we'll retouch the prostitute update. We'll get Jeff the Maori back again talking about some of the Maori politics as well. That's some interesting stuff. But I guess to leave the show today, we got Shapeshifter, a good Kiwi band with their latest album, Solstice. Got the lead track, New Day Come. So
yeah, Shapeshifter. More electronica.
A little drum and bass. Drum and bass is quite big here, actually, in New Zealand.
Yeah, it is. The whole dance thing is still kind of kicking. One thing about Ireland is that the whole dance thing is finishing. It's like a lot of my friends were regular DJs in a lot of places, and now they're basically being replaced by live bands. So it's like you feel sorry for them, but you kind of think it's good that people are getting more into live music.
Yeah, well, definitely, I agree. I mean, I don't know about your friends, they're shit, but no, just kidding. Okay. I personally would rather go see a live band than a DJ.
Yeah, no, totally. But anyway, Shapeshifter are a great drum and bass.
Check them out on the blog. We'll have links to their albums, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Hello to all the new listeners. All
right, cheers.